Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Head of the pack, I'm Matt Schneidman here with Bill Huber. From the Lambeau Field press box after the Packers' 36-28 win over the Los Angeles Rams here in Week 12, Packers are now 9-3, 3.5 games up in the NFC North with 5 games left on their schedule. Heading into the bye week, they sit half a game back of the number one seed and lone playoff bye in the NFC. The Cardinals are still 9-2. They were off this week. Packers made a statement today. You know, they didn't have, obviously, Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Josh Myers. They lose Randall Cobb at halftime after his big first half. We're past the storyline of this team can win without injuries. They've already proved that. But, Bill, what this win to me said more than anything, and this is what I wrote my story about after the game, is just a couple weeks ago, there was all this chatter about, oh, the Packers aren't all in and the Rams are, just because the Rams are getting Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr., and the Rams are offering Odell a veteran minimum. It's like the Packers don't really want to win. They never make in-season splashes. But guess what? Going all in comes in different shapes and sizes. And just because you don't get the big names doesn't mean you're not all in. They have Rasul Douglas, Devondre Campbell, Corey Bajorquez, Randall Cobb, new guys, role players that have this team positioned perhaps better than any team in the NFL to win a Super Bowl this year. So I think the job Brian Gutekunst and his staff have done to build this team into a contender is remarkable. And Aaron Rodgers said, this team reminds him of that 2010 Super Bowl championship team, that they're getting contributions from guys who it seemed like no other team wanted, and he's not sure why no other team wanted them, but they're delivering for the Packers. And we've seen what it's done. They're 9-3 with a much-deserved week off.
Yeah, that 2010 comparison is great, Matt. That team had, and I don't know the exact number, I want to say they had 18 guys on injured reserve that season. And that's when injured reserve meant your season was over. There was none of those three-game stuff that you got to come back. It was 18 guys, I want to say, who were out for the year. And they started guys like Eric Walden, who was picked up off the street. Howard Green, a defensive tackle, like 330-pound guy. He was on his way back home to Louisiana after getting cut by the Jets, and the Packers signed him on his way back home, and he came back up and was a run-stopping force and had the big hit on Roethlisberger on Nick Collins' interception. Those are the kind of guys that Rodgers is talking about. It was not the Odell Beckham kind of players. There was no big midseason trades. It was a bunch of role players, and next man up became next man up, but the key guys were there. Rodgers was there. Jordy Nelson was there. Greg Jennings was there. And it's the same thing with these guys, Matt. I realize that Bakhtiari's not there, but Rodgers is there. Adams is there. A lot of their key players are there, and those are the guys that are winning with. And Rasul Douglas is on a practice squad like 8 weeks ago, Matt. I mean, it's absurd, isn't it?
Bill, you've said before, you know, was it the same week that all that Stephon Gilmore chatter was going around?
Yeah.
And instead of trading for Stephon Gilmore, the Packers signed this guy named Rasul Douglas, who in 2021 had already been with the Las Vegas Raiders, the Houston Texans, the Arizona Cardinals, and the Packers were his fourth team in 2021, fifth team in the last calendar year. And here he is just making plays left and right. He has the pick in the end zone against Kyler Murray a couple weeks ago to seal that win against his former team. And I remember him telling us after that game, you know, on a practice squad, you kind of wonder what your purpose is. I'm paraphrasing here, but he's kind of withering away on the practice squad. And then ever since going in that game for Isaac Yiadom against the Bears on the second drive in week 6, he hasn't really looked back. And, you know, he's been a stalwart corner. Granted, he didn't have a great game last week against the Vikings, but I would say he's been a stalwart for them ever since he's been here. And today, I understand he gave up the long touchdown to Odell Beckham Jr., but he had 4 really nice pass breakups. And the pick 6 of Matthew Stafford that really put the nail in the coffin late in the third quarter to put the Packers up 19. He's been a godsend for this team. It's not often that an all-pro cornerback like Jaire Alexander goes down and you can just obviously fill his spot, not with a guy who's his talent level, but a guy who gets the job done and helps you tread water until you hope Jair can come back. So Rasul Douglas has been phenomenal for them, given, you know, the expectations coming in. It seems everyone likes him. He was talking tonight about how the locker room has made him feel like family. And why can't he be the next Eric Walden or Howard Green, or him and Corey Bajorquez and Devondre Campbell can be that next group of guys that you can look back on this season and say, man, when we signed those guys, nobody thought anything. And now they are real important role players en route to a Super Bowl.
At some point, you keep waiting for it to all kind of fall apart. You know, I did last week, but that's, you know, every team has those kind of games, but you keep waiting for it to fall apart. Like, it's Rasul Douglas. Rasul Douglas isn't that good. Eric Stokes, he's going to play like a rookie. You know, Chandon Sullivan, he's going to have some meltdowns, but they just keep turning out winning performances. You know, great job by Gutekunst finding these guys, and obviously Jerry Gray is a pretty good coach. I'm understanding his role there. It's remarkable what they have done. And I mean, look at the outside linebackers, Matt. Yeah, Gary played today, but you've got Za'Darius Smith's on IR, Whitney Merciless is on IR, Chauncey Rivers on IR, Randy Ramsey on IR, Jonathan Garvin on the COVID list. So you got Preston Smith, you've got one-elbowed Rashawn Gary, you've got practice squad promotion Tipa Nalier, and practice squad elevation Ladarius Hamlin.
Mike Smith's a pretty good coach, too.
He's a pretty good coach. It is unbelievable. They keep pressuring the quarterback. They didn't blitz tonight, Matt. Maybe you have the numbers from True Media handy at some point, but it's not like they blitzed a whole lot, and it's not like they blitzed a whole lot this season. And yet there's always pressure on Stafford tonight. I think they had 8 pass breakups altogether. Good heavens.
That's pretty good. And finish your thought. While I'm looking up, there was a good next-gen stats stat that I saw they tweeted. I'm looking for it now about the pressure on Matthew Stafford. I'm going to have to try and find it.
Yeah, I mean, it was only 2 sacks. Clark had one, and Gary had the sack strip in the first quarter that really got the ball rolling. But I just don't feel like Stafford had, it's like to say, a month of Sundays back there. The Packers rushed 4, and he didn't have, you know, they dropped 7 in the coverage, and it's not like he had a chance to survey, and eventually somebody gets open. He didn't have that luxury. The rush eventually got there and made him throw some passes probably before he wanted to.
And here's what Rob Domofsky said. This was from ESPN Stats and Info. Joe Barry sent more than 4 pass rushers after Stafford only once in his 40 dropbacks.
Dang.
That's the third lowest blitz rate, 2.5% in Stafford's career, and the lowest such rate since 2012. And they were still able to get after him and make life uncomfortable for him. So a really good job by that Packers defensive front. Bill, I want to talk about Yosh Nijman. And I know it says Nijman in the pronunciation guide, but I listened to Yosh introduce himself on Sunday Night Football in week 3, and he says Nijman.
But what does he know?
I think we're going to go with that. We were just talking about this before we started recording. There are probably some teams in the NFL who don't have one starting caliber left tackle. The Packers have 3. They have David Bakhtiari, Elgton Jenkins, and Yosh Nijman. And for a third-string left tackle to come in against the 49ers, against the Steelers, now against the Rams, who have the second highest pass rush win rate in the NFL, according to ESPN analytics. And I understand they devised the game plan to get the ball out early. There are probably some chip blocks that are in there. But Yosh has held his own. Take Aaron Rodgers' word for it. Take Matt LaFleur's word for it. This is a guy who hadn't really shown us anything since he came here as an undrafted free agent in 2019. And he's blossomed into this guy that you can just plug in there and rely on to protect the blind side of Aaron Rodgers. This isn't some you know, ho-hum duty that he's being given right here. And not to mention, his 6'8 big ass is pouncing on fumbles in the red zone too. I mean, what can't this guy do?
I remember I asked Turner about him on, was it Friday? Is that what time Turner talked to us? And Billy said he's pound for pound the most explosive guy on the roster.
Yeah.
He was that 2019 scouting combine. He did have legit testing numbers, which is why the Packers, A, signed him, and B, have stuck with him. Obviously, Bakhtiari doesn't play the preseason. Elgton Jenkins didn't play the preseason either. So Nijman took all those reps in the preseason. I think he had like 150 snaps in 3 games. won his role on the roster. You're right, he gave up 2 sacks against Cincinnati in week 5, but otherwise he's been fantastic. Von Miller is an all-decade player. He is number one in the NFL among active players in sacks.
Von Miller is a future Hall of Famer.
He's a future Hall of Famer. Maybe he's not that guy anymore, but he's still a damn good football player. I mean, a damn good football player. And as Rodgers said tonight, he kind of forgot that Nijman was out there, and that is the best compliment anybody could ever say about offensive linemen.
Listen, Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Leonard Floyd are going to get theirs. And Greg Gaines, one of Rodgers' workout buddies in the offseason, and this is why I like the ESPN analytics stuff, Greg Gaines is the number one interior defensive lineman in the NFL in run-stop win rate. Or he might be number 9 and Sebastian Joseph Day is number 1. Either way, Greg Gaines is a very underrated player. And the Rams have guys all along their defensive line, not just Donald and Miller and Leonard Floyd. And the only sack Rodgers took tonight was what he called that phantom sack when he's scrambling up the middle and Gaines trips him up for that 0-yard gain. Pun intended. I thought, obviously, the run game didn't get going. What, the Packers ran for, let's see, 32 carries for 92 yards, so 2.9 average. That's really bad. But the presence of the run was there. And some of those were on 3rd and short, 2nd and short, when A.J. Dillon is pushing bodies forward and getting the only 2 yards. Some of those aren't designed to be long runs. Some of those are designed just to get, you know, 2 yards and keep the chains moving. And how many times did we see A.J. Dillon tonight, not only in the passing game with yards after catch, but in the running game with yards after contact? I mean, Taylor Rapp was just like a stuffed animal out there trying to tackle A.J. Dillon, and that's what he brings to this team. We've heard so many times about that cold weather Green Bay back that he is. It's extremely valuable what he can do after contact in the running game, because a running back who can get you 8 yards, sure, that's valuable, but what might be just as valuable is a running back who can turn a 0-yard gain into a 4-yard gain. And that's what A.J. Dillon can do almost every time.
Yeah, he was really good. And for all the people who have complained about Matt LaFleur and Mike McCarthy for years before that, about if the running game doesn't work, they'll ditch the running game. They're going to start chucking the ball over the yard. They didn't today. Dillon and Jones with the 30 carries kind of kept, I mean, it certainly kept the Rams honest, where you just can't go tee off on your 9-toed quarterback. They did just enough to keep the Rams honest, and as Dillon said after the game, kind of kept them ahead of the chains. It was always 2nd and 7 or 2nd and 6 and not 2nd and 10. That's a big deal when you face a really good pass rush and your quarterback's wounded.
It's a good point. Listen, I think if we're talking big picture NFC here, the Packers have positioned themselves really well. You can say the Cardinals are the best team. You can say the Buccaneers are the best team, or the Packers. I think the Cowboys and the Rams have kind of taken a step back here in recent weeks, but you know, they could be right there at the end when all is said and done. I'm going to take a look at the Cardinals' remaining schedule, and we'll read
I've done
it
here. I already wrote a story about it, Matt.
Okay, excellent.
So here we go. Arizona, this is pending the Sunday night game, which may or may not be over as we do this. They are at Chicago, who's 4-7, home against the Rams, who are 7-4, at Detroit, 0-10-1, home against Indy, which is 6-6, at Dallas, which is 7-4, home against Seattle, 3-7. Seattle plays on Monday against Washington. It is a total of 27-38, 3 of their 6 games against teams 500 or better. For Green Bay, here we go. Home against Chicago, 4-7, at Baltimore, which is the hardest game in any of these schedules, I think. At Baltimore, 7-3.
Lamar Jackson has thrown 4 interceptions tonight as we speak, so it might not be.
Home against Cleveland, 6-5, obviously pending this game. Home against Minnesota, 5-6, and then at Detroit, 0-10-1. And then Tampa, don't forget about Tampa. They are a game back here. Mm-hmm. Tampa's at Atlanta, 5-6. Home against Buffalo, 7-4. Home against New Orleans, 5-6. At Carolina, 5-7. At the Jets, 3-8. Home against Carolina, again, 5-7. Their total's 30-38. So neither of these three teams play a really good schedule. And I would say Tampa against Buffalo and Green Bay against Baltimore, probably the hardest games that anybody faces.
And hey, if the Packers can get that bye, who knows? That could be the difference between let's say they want to give Jair Alexander and Za'Darius Smith and maybe even Bakhtiari an extra week to rest. That bye week is going to be crucial this year. It is every year, but especially when there's only one to go around.
If it's going to be Arizona, where do you want to play Arizona? Do you want to play him there, or do you want to get Kyler Murray on a maybe treacherous surface when it's really cold for a bunch of guys from Arizona?
Definitely
seems
here.
Seems pretty. I mean, Tom Brady's obviously made for this because he's played 8 million games in New England. But, man, you just think that Arizona would not be at home here.
And, if the Rams come in here, we just saw what can happen if they do. Mike McCarthy isn't going to win a game here. Maybe just because that story would be incredible. But I don't think the Cowboys can come in here and win it in a crucial playoff game. I said before the season the Packers are winning the Super Bowl, and I'm sticking to my prediction. Now, they do have a couple very important injury things to take care of. Rodgers will know here in the near future if he needs surgery on his toe. He doesn't plan on missing any time and will, it seems, forego surgery if it would require him to miss time. David Bakhtiari, they'll reevaluate him after the bye. Aaron Jones toughed it out and played this week. But for guys that were on the fence, like Aaron Jones, Rashawn Gary, Alan Lazard, now with Alexander and Smith, like this bye week is crucial. Yes, it's been a slog to get here. But Aaron Rodgers was asked tonight, I believe you asked him, Bill, if you had told him that they would be without all these guys and have all these injuries and be 9-3 going into a week 13 bye, what would he have said? And I believe he said, I would have said that's a pretty damn good start. And he's right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it goes back to that left tackle stuff. To not have Bakhtiari for all those games and to keep winning is amazing. And then to be without Jenkins and you're still okay. The Goody's done a hell of a job. Again, it's not the splash stuff. It's exactly how you started the podcast, man. It's not all the splash stuff, which it's all the headlines. And it's these really understated things that the personal guys really know what they're doing.
Maybe Brian Gutekunst does know what he's doing.
Maybe.
And Randall Cobb. Well, I guess we'll find out here soon how severe his groin injury is. But for him to play and then to just be immediately ruled out for the second half is a little concerning. But other than that, no injuries to report off of tonight's game, at least major ones. So that's tonight's game. Let's get into some questions. We got a bunch from you guys. From the man Mulcahy. Impressions on Aaron Jones' first game back. Hard to tell on limited touches into that D-line, but looked like he moved well. Bonus, which player do we think shows his feet to the media next? Aaron Jones, Matt LaFleur said he wasn't on a pitch count per se. He had 10 carries, only one target in the passing game, no catches. But Bill, I don't want to open up this can of worms, but I think Matt LaFleur put it well. It's 1A and 1B with him and A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon is not a backup running back. And tonight, against a very physical D-line, maybe you wanted A.J. Dillon in there for someone who can push that line an extra yard or two instead of Aaron Jones, who maybe couldn't get around the edge. You didn't want to put too much stress on that knee. I was surprised he played in the first place. But just get him in there. Add that aura of unpredictability in the running game. Or what they're going to do, use him in motion as a decoy. He doesn't have to have big numbers, especially when Dillon is, 5 catches for 21 yards and a touchdown, 20 carries for 69 yards. That's fine. And you're not going to, nobody's going to run the ball extremely well against the Rams. And the Packers did, just enough to give the impression that they were committed to the run. And that kind of opened up a passing game that was extremely effective tonight.
I have to go back and look, and I probably should have. Dillon's been, I would say for the least 5-6 games, he's been the more effective player.
I agree. Ever since you said he wasn't good at football.
I did not say that. I was questioning whether he was kind of the second round guy. I mean, if you draft a guy in a second round, you have expectations. I was wondering if he was going to fall short of those. I was obviously wrong about that. He's been phenomenal. And on a day like this, Matt, who the hell wants to tackle A.J. Dillon? Certainly not Taylor Rapp in the fourth quarter. He just got run over.
That's a good point. Which player do we think shows his feet to the media next? I'm hoping it's no one, but
yeah, that'd be great.
If I could think of, you know, a close friend of Aaron Rodgers who he could get to, I don't think it's gonna be anyone. But if I had to pick someone, I could see Bakhtiari doing it when he gets back in his first press conference after they clear him to play. Kind of like
that's
the,
good. Yeah, that's a good guess.
The fun-loving guy who's close to Rodgers and would be willing to carry out a joke for him like Billy Turner was. I'll say David Bakhtiari.
That'd be good. I like that. Maybe Velda Scantling can like come out of a Kenny Clark press conference and, you know, he just teases him relentlessly.
Yeah.
Maybe Velda Scantling can persuade Kenny to do it or force him to do it.
There you go. Loyal listener Cecilia, besides the great work from the beat writers, what should Packer fans be most thankful for after 12 weeks? Which player contribution should we be most thankful for? Douglas, Campbell, Dylan. Overall thing you should be most thankful for, obviously a 9-3 record despite all the injuries, I'd say. Which player contribution? I got to say Devondre Campbell. I know Rasul Douglas and A.J. Dillon are real close honorable mentions, but we keep going back to Devondre Campbell for a guy that was on the street in June. You know, this wasn't a guy that was signed in the second wave of free agency. He was signed in the 19th wave of free agency, and he's become one of the best middle linebackers in all of football. So I would say Devondre Campbell.
Yeah, just to go, just to take someone different. If you can't stop quarterbacks, you've got no chance in this league, and Rasul Douglas has been a godsend. So, yeah, I clearly agree that it's Campbell, but Rasul Douglas would be my runner-up. They'd be up a creek without him. So, I mean, Kevin King's out again, believe it or not. Just shockingly.
Can you imagine?
So now you're on to Isaac Yiadom playing corner?
Can you believe the Packers wanted Yiadom to play over Rasul Douglas in Chicago?
No.
Unbelievable.
That's all I got for you. No.
There you go. From Kevin Stalsberg, at the bye, what is your biggest takeaway about this team and their chances to make a Super Bowl run? I think we touched on it. I think in order to make a Super Bowl run, you can't just have the stars. You got to have the role players who nobody really knows about outside the organization that are making these key plays. Like we've talked about, Douglas, Corey Bohorquez in crunch time when your offense isn't getting it done, pinning the Rams at their own 1 yard line with a 61-yard punt that kind of confuses Cooper Kupp. So he has to let it drop, then it bounces all the way to the one. Those are the kinds of plays you need. You don't just need the bombs from Rodgers to Adams, the sacks from Rashawn Gary, the interceptions from, you know, Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage. You need those role players to make huge plays. That's what they did today. That's what they've been doing all season. And that's my biggest takeaway and biggest reason I think that they can make a Super Bowl run. And they can, you know, in years past, it's been Mercedes Lewis, Tyler Irvin, you know, Jared Veldheer, but in the past 2 years, they haven't had this amount of role players making such important plays and playing such big roles. It was a play here or there in the past, but not to this level, which is why I think they're better positioned to make a Super Bowl run this year than in the past 2 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. They are so mentally tough, Matt. That's what strikes me about these guys is all the injuries, it'd be easy to have the woe is me. It'd be easy to think, well, there's a bye coming up. It'd been easy for Aaron Jones to sit this game out. There's just so many reasons for these guys to fold, not fold, that's not the right way to put it, to exhale maybe a little bit, and they just don't do it. They're just so mentally tough, and that's what, last year was almost too easy at times. Yeah, they had some really, couple ugly losses and all, but when they won it, it was just so ridiculously easy, and they scored a million points. These guys have to scrap and fight for everything. And I think that's really going to pay off come January when you're playing a team like the Rams, that you've got, that you're battle tested, that you know when push comes to shove, you can make the plays. Yeah, I will go there. That's what stands out to me about these guys. This is the most mentally tough team I've seen here in a long time.
And that's important. From Clay E, who might the Packers expect to get back after the bye week? The word, obviously, on Bakhtiari is he'll be reevaluated after the bye week. I know Tom Pelissero reported he had that arthroscopic knee procedure done to clean some stuff up and was feeling better. That would explain why he hasn't practiced in a couple weeks. So they obviously hope to get him back for the stretch run. For the first time, I saw Jaire Alexander doing some ball drills at practice this week. He was doing some agility ladder, so it seems like he's nearing a return. Za'Darius Smith was at the game tonight. He's been around for a couple weeks. They're hopeful he comes back for the stretch run. If you can get Jair Alexander, Za'Darius Smith, and David Bakhtiari back in December, three All-Pro players, I'd say that's pretty good. Even if they're not at their normal All-Pro levels. We talked about tonight, Packers are trotting out Tipa and Ladarius Hamilton. Get Za'Darius Smith in there. If you can have Bakhtiari in there, for as good as Yash Nijman has been, you want Bakhtiari in there. And for as good as Rasul Douglas and Eric Stokes have been, if you can move one of those guys into the slot instead of Channon Sullivan, or even put Jair Alexander in the slot sometimes, you need to do that. So if you can, maybe it's not right after the bye week for that Sunday night game against the Bears in 2 weeks, but if you can get those guys back in the next month or so, that would be crucial.
Yeah, you're right. And they're not going to play against Chicago, you wouldn't think, but it's Baltimore the week after that. Is that right? That would give them 2 weeks of practice. Obviously, Bakhtiari's practiced quite a bit anyway, so I wouldn't think he'd be too out of sorts. But yeah, shoot. You just need to get your guys ready for the playoffs. So if these guys can play two or three games of regular season and have that be their quote-unquote preseason to kind of get off all that rust, that'd be the ideal scenario.
Yep. Let's take our question from our loyal Muckman, our Swedish listener. Is the special team soundtrack U2's With or Without You? That's funny. I was going to ask LaFleur tonight. I think it's more of a question for tomorrow because I was going to make a joke. I was wondering when LaFleur and Charles Woodson embraced at halftime if he was going to ask Charles Woodson if he could return punts in the second
exactly.
half. Exactly. Amari Rodgers slips on the first one. They put in Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb muffs it, turns it over. Mason Crosby misses another field goal. Punt team obviously did better tonight. You know, Henry Black had that huge hit on J.J. Koski, and Chris Barnes recovered the fumble. But special teams are not special, as Aaron Rodgers said on the Pat McAfee show a couple weeks back. And yes, Matt LaFleur will be able to get some sleep on this bye week, but man, he might lose some over that special teams. The Packers, we keep saying it, special teams has a chance to really cost the Packers a game in the playoffs, and it already has a couple times in the regular season. But if your season ends because of a Mason Crosby missed chip shot or a muffed punt return, that's a long offseason to sleep on that.
Darn straight it is. At least they did something positive tonight, though, right? I mean, you mentioned the turnover. They downed a punt at the one, so it was two big plays by the punt team. The kickoff coverage was, other than one return, was pretty strong. They recovered the onside kick at the end of the game. They made a couple field goals at least. So there's at least something for those guys to maybe feel pretty good about heading into things. But, man, Matt, it was a shit show pregame. We watched those kicker drills. Even when Crosby's in a roll, we always kind of watch those pregame warm-ups of the kickers just to kind of get the gauge on range and stuff. And kicking to the south end, I'm pretty sure he missed five in a row.
Yeah.
And after everyone, you could just see his body language of even on the seventh floor where he sit. You could see his body language and him talking to those guys. At one point, he took Wirtle out and he was talking to Bohorquez about holds. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about, but
what'd you say? You said it's like cramming for a test at the last minute.
Yeah, it was like, shit, I got a final in a half hour. I haven't studied. Let's get after it. I mean, obviously, these guys have put in plenty of work and it's not working. Here they are, 45 minutes to kickoff, and they're trying to figure out the field unit. My God.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And I got a question here from my friend Steve Clark. It's two questions here on special teams. A, is Crosby done? I know it's not just him with the field goal issues, but he's like 87 years old. He's had an outstanding career. And then the other part of it is how much of the success this year can be attributed to the decision to part ways with J.K. Scott?
At the end of the day, though, Bill, Corey Bohorquez, as phenomenal of a punter he is, he's paid to hold in the NFL as well. I understand J.K. Scott was a good holder, but you've had, what, a couple months now to work with Corey Bohorquez? At the end of the day, the reasoning, I don't want to call it an excuse, but the reasoning of there's been turnover in the operation, I understand that with Steven Wirtle because he's newer, but the changing holders, which Crosby used a couple weeks ago, that's not valid anymore. You got to figure that stuff out, man. It's been a couple months now. If you don't have it figured out by now, that's on you. That's not on the newness of the operation.
Darn straight. And I don't know the exact numbers from this year, but I know last year they kicked the ball as in field goals and extra points way more often than they punted. It's probably closer to 50-50 now, but between extra points and field goals, he's holding as much as he's punting. Like you said, you got to get it figured out because it's going to come back. These guys aren't that good, Matt. I mean, it's a good team, but they're not that good where they can just go pee away 3 points or right. 6 points, right? And just figure, well, we're going to score so many touchdowns. Who gives a shit? No, they're not that good of a football team.
Tonight they were, because unlike earlier in the season when their offense took a while to wake up, and it's funny because they didn't score 30s from week 3 until week 11. And now they've scored 30 in back-to-back games, and in both games they're upset because they didn't score over 40. And I can't blame them. They should have, you know, they got off to a miserable start against the Vikings. They stalled in the red zone a couple times tonight. And Rodgers said, I think he used the word bugaboo. He said the red zone. You don't hear anybody saying gold zone this year, Bill.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. It hasn't been shit this year. You don't hear them flaunting around the gold zone and Mike Myers and all the dances this year. And I love gold because they're not very good in that area. But luckily, Crosby hit a couple field goals tonight. And, you know, they got a couple big plays from the defense, the pick six from Rasul Douglas, and they didn't have to be perfect. But if you get a team like Tampa in here and it's going to be a one-score game, you better convert some of those into touchdowns. And they did tonight to Randall Cobb. Rodgers ran that one in. A.J. Dillon had the touchdown catch. But a team as good as the Packers can be on offense, you want all of those.
Yeah, 3 out of 5, that's not very good. They were 80% last year. That's 60% tonight. The league average is mid-60s, so it's better, but it's still far, far worse than they were last year, and they're just leaving way too many points on the field.
Yep. All right. Let's go one more from Matt Pickett, loyal listener. Is Aaron Donald overrated, or is it partly that our banged-up O-line is just that good? Aaron Donald is not overrated.
No, he's not.
You can say for the past couple years, maybe more than that, he has been the best player in all of football, not just the best defensive lineman. He is the mm-hmm. best player in football, a bona fide future Hall of Famer. He would be a unanimous first ballot guy if he retired in 5 minutes. He's an incredible player. And in the last two games he has played the Packers, they have devised a really good plan to neutralize him. You're not going to completely stop him. You know, that one time where he blew by Billy Turner and wrestled, I believe it was it Aaron Jones or A.J. Dillon to the ground for
Dillon.
That short, A.J. Dillon for a short gain, or no gain, actually. He's a game wrecker. But the Packers have done a really good job of getting under his skin the past two games. He had the 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty on Elgton Jenkins in the playoff game last year where he grabbed his face mask. Tonight, he didn't get penalized, but there's a video going around of him literally choking out Lucas Patrick and getting under his skin and limiting his effectiveness by getting rid of the ball quickly and kind of neutralizing his pass rush by running the ball, however effectively they do it, I think has been really impressive.
That play that you referenced was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. He did a swim move so fast that I'm not sure Billy Turner touched him, and Turner ended up on his knees. He was just beating. It was like, holy, that was an amazing play. One of the great plays I've seen in a long time. I got one more question I want to ask, man.
Sure.
It's so interesting. This is from the real MJR. Has Yash shown enough to be in the running to start at right tackle in 2022? That's a fascinating question because I think for the last 3 months we've thought Bakhtiari will be back at left tackle next year, and Elgton Jenkins has been so good at left tackle, they'll put him at right tackle next year.
Right.
Because and they'll cut Billy Turner for cost-cutting reasons. That's a fascinating question. It's a great question. It's a great quote-unquote problem or a great issue to have, but
yeah,
that's an interesting. I have no answer for you, MJR. I got nothing for you. It's a great question.
That is a great question, and I'll have to ponder over that one because, you know, I think Billy Turner's been pretty under the radar good this year. Is it something? But the thing is, Bill, he was not good at right guard in 2019.
No, he was not.
You probably want to keep Royce Newman there to develop him for long term. 2022 starting offensive line right now, go. I say Bakhtiari, not Jenkins, because he'll still be out from his ACL.
True.
Bakhtiari, Runyon, Myers, Newman, Turner. And I say Nyman's still that swing tackle.
I'll put Nijman at right tackle because I'm going to go try to talk and look up something as we speak. They're so
Are you about to look up Billy on Over the Cap?
I love Over the Cap. Yeah. Over the Cap is one of the great websites in all the world if you're into this stuff. I mean, they are like $46 million over next year's cap. If you move on from Billy Turner, that'd be $3.2 million of cap savings. They need every penny they can get. Yeah, I can see Nijman at right tackle till Jenkins gets back, and then you figure it out from there.
Good stuff. I'm about to tweet my story. I know, obviously, by the time you guys listen to this, it will long have been tweeted. But we thank you guys for listening. We've got a bye week coming up. We'll have a bye week episode for you guys. I don't know at what time that will be, but it will happen. And then next up after that is Sunday Night Football against the Bears here at Lambeau Field. If you're asking if that game will get flexed out, the answer is no, because it's Packers-Bears. I don't care how bad they are. It's going to happen. We thank you guys for listening, as always, sending in your questions. I know we can't get to all of them because we'd be here for 7 hours, but your guys' listenership and interest in the show is very much appreciated. So really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you guys next time.